This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. There's a marriage gap or marriage divide in this country. If you have a college degree, chances are you'll get married, you'll wait until marriage before having children, and your divorce rate will be lower than those without a college degree. Young adults without that degree tend to delay marriage, and if they're living with someone, it's not unusual for them to have a child or two. But even though the divorce rate and the rate of cohabitation are relatively high, most Americans will get married one day. Those are just some of the findings our guest Andrew Cherlin wrote about in the New York Times in an essay titled, In the Season of Marriage, A Question, Why Bother? It caught our eye, and we asked him to join us today on Radio Times. He's a professor of public policy at Johns Hopkins University, where his work focuses on the sociology of families and public policy, on marriage and divorce, and on children's well-being. He was a guest on Radio Times when his book, The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and Family Today, was first published. And Andrew Cherlin, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be back. Thank you for asking me again.
You're very welcome. You wrote that, marriage has become a status symbol. I always thought it was a status symbol, but what do you mean by that?
Well, it was more like a union card 50 years ago. It's something you had to have in order to be a respectable person. There was just no other way to live a respectable life. So marriage was important 50 years ago, and it was something highly valued, but it wasn't special. It wasn't unusual. It wasn't distinctive. Now, when marriage is optional, people are treating it almost like a merit badge, really. You know, it's something I do when the rest of my life is in good shape. And because not everybody is doing it, and certainly not everybody's doing it early in their adult years, it's become something of a prize, a marker, you know, a marker of status, saying, I made it. You know, my life's in good shape, and so I'm going to show everybody by getting married.
And is that because people are tending to marry later in life? By the time, if they have a career, they might be well on their way to establishing that career. They might have a little money in their bank as well.
That's certainly true for people, especially college grads, who aren't marrying until they're 28 or 30 or 32. It's also true to some extent for people with less money and less education who are postponing marriage until they think they have a good job, until they think they have enough money for a nice wedding. After this piece, a man who runs a wedding facility in upstate New York wrote me a note and saying, you know, what you said in the article is exactly right. A lot of these weddings are being paid for by the bride and groom themselves, and the ceremony is becoming more personal and smaller. It's really about them, I think, not about two families uniting people. So for everybody, this new meaning of marriage is, let me celebrate how well my personal life is going, but I'm not going to get married until I can do that.
Does that seem like a good thing? And by that, I mean, do you think that is good for marriage, is that people are marrying later and perhaps a little more mature, a little more established, and might know what they're getting themselves into?
Sure. Yeah, I don't think late marriage is by itself a problem. The age of marriage is much higher now than it was a couple of generations ago, maybe 4 or 5 years older on average. Marriage used to be the first step into adulthood. Now it's one of the last. There's nothing wrong with that. Right. I think the problem is what people are doing before they get married. A lot of people are going into kind of short-term living together, cohabiting unions, and increasingly having kids in those unions. That's, I think, the issue, is having the kids beforehand in relationships that don't last typically, that are unstable, which expose those kids to a lot of changes in their family life. So I don't have a problem with late marriage. I think the problem is not delaying having kids until you get there.
But the idea is, for some families, and we have to say, speaking broadly here, the idea of having children before getting married is not, what, so shocking these days?
Right. That's a big change from a couple of generations ago, when having kids outside of marriage was seen as shocking. It isn't seen that way anymore. Most young adults think it's okay to have a kid outside of marriage. So there's been a big cultural change. And that cultural change has affected what you might call the working class, the lower middle class, people who've got a high school degree but don't have a college degree. Those folks, there are lots of them, tend to think, while marriage is great, it's okay to have a kid outside of marriage. And they also think having a kid is something that's really important, that they must do. Marriage is kind of optional. So So if they don't see a marriage coming anytime soon, they may actually go ahead and have a kid with their partner and see it as an acceptable way to start a family in a way it wasn't a couple of generations ago.
But it seems they are saying something about marriage, about how they view marriage.
They're saying that marriage is not central to their lives compared to having kids. They're saying that what's really important is having kids, that you have to do that. Marriage is nice, but it's in second place. That may also be how we are different from things were in my parents' generation, for example, where marriage was just the center of family life. Now, for a lot of people, having kids is the center, and marriage is a good way to do it, and maybe we'll get there, but for the moment, we're focusing on having kids.
But also, I mean, there's so many interesting things going on, one of them having to do with marriage equality or same-sex marriage. It seems that every week or so there's another state that has basically signed on giving gay and lesbian couples the same marriage rights and responsibilities that straight couples have had. How do you think that is changing our notion, our definition, our thinking about marriage?
Well, I think what's happening is that the support for same-sex marriage is kind of injecting new life into heterosexual marriage, opposite-sex marriage. A lot of people have been moving away from seeing marriage as central to their lives, as I just said. But now you've got a group of people who don't have the right to marry, except in those states, who are saying marriage is really important. And they're saying it's important not just because it gives them more rights, but also because of the status it provides. They're saying, you know, to live a first-class personal life, you have to be able to show you're married. And we want to do that, and it's important. So the people in favor of same-sex marriage are kind of invigorating opposite-sex marriage. They're saying marriage itself, you know, of whatever the sex is of the partners, is really important, and we should value it more.
And the idea that it's something more than a civil union or a domestic partnership.
Right. You know, people talk about support for same-sex marriage in terms of the rights that the partners will get, and that's very important. For example, you cannot file a joint federal tax return in a same-sex partnership. The federal government doesn't let you do that. And as you know, there's some cases before the Supreme Court right now about whether the federal government can, in fact, restrict the benefits it gives to opposite-sex partners. Right now, we're in the case where a lot of people are saying rights are important, but it's clearly not enough. You know it's not enough when you find people in states where there are domestic partnership legislation saying that's not good enough. We need marriage. And if you read the Obama administration's briefs that it filed for these Supreme Court cases that are now before the court, those briefs say, yes, that law is important, but domestic partnerships that just give laws are not good enough. Well, why aren't they good enough? They're not good enough because they don't give status. They don't give you the recognition. So everybody seems to be saying, yes, rights are important, but that's not the whole story. Maybe not even the main story. What marriage does now is confer status, recognition, a sense that you're living a first-class personal life. And people who are in favor of same-sex marriage say, we want the right to have that status, too. That's what I think is happening.
Well, and I guess it's this notion of shared values, of wanting what opposite-sex couples have had, which is the ability to express your love for someone, the idea to have some satisfaction within one's relationship and support for that relationship as well.
Right. So in a way, what same-sex marriage advocates are saying is a conservative message. It's a message that says marriage, the institution of marriage, which many people thought was long gone and dead, is really important still, even in the 21st century. It's important not necessarily or certainly not just because of the rights and privileges it gives, but it's important because people in this country still see it as a mark of distinction, you know, a measure of status. And we want that, too. It's that kind of conservative pro-marriage argument that liberals weren't making that's now, I think, injecting new life into the old institution of marriage.
In fact, you wrote in this piece that something like 80% of Americans will marry at some point in their life. So for probably a whole host of reasons, Americans like to get married, or most Americans do.
They do. They do. They seem to like to get married more than do people in other wealthy countries, for example. That we have a stronger set of values about marriage. And I think we always have, in our history, had a stronger set of values about marriage than in some of the other wealthy countries, certainly the European countries. So Americans seem to place a high value on marriage. And because of that high value, everyone wants to do it. In some European countries, there's not been as much agitation for same-sex marriage, at least until recently, because activists don't care as much about marriage. It still matters here. It matters here, and we know it because everyone is fighting about it more than in other countries. That's how we can tell.
So why do Americans value marriage so much? What does it mean to
Americans?
Well,
that's a good question. You know, have they just not gotten the message yet that you don't have to get married? What is it that makes them marry? The Times editor who commissioned this piece you mentioned said to me, listen, why is marriage rational anymore? I'd like you to write a piece about why anybody would bother to get married, because you don't have to. And she's right, you don't have to. You can live a respectable life now without marrying in a way that wasn't possible when I was in my 20s. So what's that all about? I think it's about a high value on family, community, marriage, that's been part of the American culture back from, and it, well, into the back into the colonial days when the Puritans were saying how important marriage is, how it's central to the United States and central to the colonies, rather. So for a long time, we have thought that bringing people together in marriage is the highest value of personal life. All the way back from when you go back to the founding of this country. And we've had fights over marriage. We've had fights over whether there should be polygamous marriage, if that is, people marrying more than one partner. In the late 1800s, Utah and other states wanted to do that. We had a fight over it. We've battled over marriage for a couple of centuries now, and we're battling over it because it's so important to us culturally. But you know what? We also value being independent and making up our own minds, and that can cause us to leave our marriages. And so our divorce rates have been higher than in other places, too.
Well, that was, and we're almost having a break here. That was my other point, which is, yes, we collectively say we believe and want to be married, but we haven't done an awfully good job of it. I know the divorce rate is down from its high of about 50%, but nonetheless, a lot of people divorce in this country.
Yes, they do. So they get married, and they get divorced, and what do? They get married again, on and on, more so than in other places.
And that's that marriage go-round that you wrote about.
Yes, that's correct. Right. We have more changes in families and partners than do people in any other wealthy countries. And kids see more parents and parents' partners going in and out of their households than everywhere. And I think that's the real problem. So people are getting married, but what are they doing first and how long are they staying married is kind of the issue.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Andrew Cherlin is our guest. He's a professor of public policy at Johns Hopkins University. He has spent much of his life looking at marriage and family and divorce and children's well-being. And we called him up after having read a piece he had in the New York Times recently about marriage. We want to know your view of marriage. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Germantown Friends School, committed to providing academic excellence and Quaker values for boys and girls grades kindergarten through 12. Hosting an open house on Friday, May 17th at 8:15 a.m. with the opportunity to visit classes in session, meet faculty, learn about art, drama, music, and athletics programs, and to tour the 7-acre historic urban campus, including the Green Science Center. Germantown Friends School open house on Friday, May 17th at 8:15 a.m. GermantownFriends.org.
This week on This American Life, when David Sedaris was young, his parents sent him off to a special Greek summer camp. He hated it.
There was one boy at camp I felt at ease with. Like me, he used his free time to curl in a fetal position, staring at the bedside calendar upon which he'd X'd out all the days he had so far endured.
How they became the bitterest of enemies, and other stories of the cruelty of children, this week on This American Life from Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
After any disaster, like a hurricane or a flood, grown-ups have a lot on their minds, but so do kids.
Sometimes for kids, the most important thing on their mind is really, what about my game on Tuesday, or what about my glove?
We'll talk with the founder of a group that pitches in to help kids in distress keep playing ball. That's next time on Tell Me More.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Our guest, Andrew Cherlin, has been researching the American family and says that the reasons that people are getting married these days has been changing. And he's a professor of public policy at Johns Hopkins University, wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Marriage Go-Round. He was a guest on Radio Times talking about that book. And we want to hear from you about how you view marriage, why people get married these days. We'd be curious about your answer to that question. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me pick up on something you said earlier about couples getting married when they're a bit older than they were a generation or so ago, a little more established in their life, a little more financially secure. And I've noticed, I mean, there are, of course, very lavish weddings as well, but there seems to be kind of a theatricality to some of these weddings where this couple is trying to make an interesting, theatrical, maybe even dramatic statement about themselves. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. What's happening, well, let's go back in time. Weddings used to be events where two families united to bring two young people together. It was a family affair. And while it was focused on the husband and wife to be, of course, it was a formal ritual. It was in church. And it really wasn't, it was really about the families. Today, it's more about the people themselves. 50 years ago, it would have been unthinkable for that young bride and groom to have paid for that wedding themselves. But today, a third of all weddings, the husband and wife pay for it themselves. And the rest of them, they contribute. Mm. So they're creating a performance. That's the theatricality you see. The young adults are creating a performance, a piece of theater that they put on in front of everybody else, kind of focused on them, about their life, what they're doing. So it says, marriage is about me now. I'm paying for it. I'm older. I'm more mature. And come to my celebration so we can talk and see about how good I'm doing.
Well, everyone has gone on YouTube and, you know, looked at dances and performances and routines that couples have come up with. But perhaps it says because if you're 29 or 30 or 32 years old, you are a person and you've had enough of a life that you can say, this is who I am.
Sure, and it's no longer appropriate to behave like a 20-year-old, which is the age many people were a half century ago when they got married. And you do have the money to have a celebration. But you could also go downtown to the Justice of the Peace and just save yourself a lot of bucks.
You could.
But people don't. You could, but they don't. Instead, they paid $20,000 for the theatrical wedding that you've seen and heard about, in which everybody comes to celebrate them. It's about celebrating the bride and groom. Older, more accomplished, have achieved more, and now they're kind of putting the last brick in place, the capstone to their family careers by marrying, and they're asking everybody to come and celebrate on them.
Well, it'll be interesting to see in 10, 20, 30 years whether these couples are still together.
Yes, it will be. I think the older age at marriage is helping. I think that's why the divorce rate has not been going up for most anybody, and why it's been going down for college graduates. One reason is people are more mature, and I think that helps. So hopefully we won't see the really high levels of divorce that we've seen before. But still, for people without college degrees, marriages are still pretty fragile. Because I think it's harder for them to get decent jobs that support marriages in today's economy. So we're still seeing a lot of divorce, but certainly the late marriages seem to help people be more stable when they get divorced. They know more about themselves. They're able to judge better, I think, their partnerships.
But it seems that more couples live together. I mean, cohabitation, I guess, is the more formal word. But that was probably unusual a generation or two ago. Today, that seems pretty common.
In the early 1970s, when I was in my early 20s, I came home to have dinner with my parents, and I told them about my girlfriend, and they said, where does she live? And I said, with me. And they nearly had heart attacks. I mean, they nearly fell off their chairs. They couldn't believe that their son had done something like this. A few years ago, when my daughter got married, I would have been shocked had she not lived with her fiancé beforehand. And that's the change that we've seen in just a generation. It's a huge change. Cohabitation is now accepted other than among some small groups, it's accepted, it's seen as okay, and it's become a stage that a majority of people go through before they get married.
And so what's interesting, and this is in part what your article was about, which is that since you don't have to get married, we don't say disparaging things about single people the way we did when you and I were growing up. So the question is, if you can live together, have kids together, pay the bills together, why, you know, I guess we're back to that same question, which is then, what does marriage mean?
And, you know, in places like Scandinavia, people are living together for 10, 20, 30 years, and they may get married somewhere along the way. They may not. It doesn't seem to be as important to them and to their friends and neighbors whether they're married or not. So far, here in the U.S., it's still important. I mean, it's still important, but it's important as the capstone, the last brick you put in place when the rest of adulthood is all set up. We in the U.S. still value marriage in that role, and so we still have those theatrical weddings you're talking about. Who knows? Maybe in 20 or 30 years that will fade away, and nobody will get married here either. But, you know, I've been at this for a few decades, and I've thought that for a long time that marriage would be in sharp decline, and in a sense, it's not. So it's been persistent. It's still here, but its meaning is different. It's not the first step into adulthood now. It's kind of the last step. It's a symbol of making it, having a good personal life. That's what it means.
And that's Andrew Turlin, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. Professor of Public Policy at Johns Hopkins University, has spent a number of decades looking at families, looking at marriage and divorce and children as well, and wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Marriage Go Round. Turns out that Americans churn a lot when it comes to marriage. Yes, marry a lot. Yes, divorce, and then get remarried. And of course, there's cohabitation as well. We want to hear from you, your view of marriage. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We've got Jim from Philadelphia joining us on Radio Times. And Jim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I very much enjoy your program.
Thanks.
And listening to the first 15 or 20 minutes of your discussion, I hadn't heard the word commitment. I myself have been married for 48 years and entered marriage with the expectation and the promise of a lifelong commitment. And although the divorce rate is high, there are still 50% of us who don't get divorced. And I see that that commitment not being just a status symbol, but as a promise of some stability in our society and commitment to family. And I wonder if you have comments about that.
Sure.
It seems to me that it's such a very important part of our whole society.
Well, Jim, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Andrew Turlin, commitment is a very important word, it seems to me.
Yes, it is. And for people who are married, the idea right now, I think, is commitment for now. I'm committed to this relationship, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten married. And as long as it goes well, I'll stay with it. But if it doesn't go well, I'm entitled to leave. And that's, I think, the difference from 50 years ago, when a lot of people stuck with unhappy marriages for the sake of the children and even afterwards. Today, people don't do that. So in that sense, commitment has declined some in marriage. It's no longer the lifetime pledge it was before. A bigger problem, though, is a lot of people are living together without getting married, and there's no commitment. There, the idea is the door's open all the time. You know, you can just walk out. And so those relationships are highly fragile now, and as we've talked about, a lot of people are going ahead and having kids in those relationships. There's still some commitment in marriage, but it certainly doesn't mean the same thing as it did in the 50s and early 60s, I think.
But do you see those children at risk, those children living with their cohabitating parents or adults?
Yeah, I think that's the main problem with late marriage, is that people are having kids beforehand in relationships that don't last. And as that's happening, there are more and more kids seeing unstable families as these living together relationships form and then break and then form again. That's really the issue. I'm not so bothered by cohabitation itself. I'm just concerned about what's happening to kids, because I think that stable environments are best for kids. A long-term cohabiting relationship can provide a stable environment, but here in the U.S., we don't tend to do that. If we're living together, we either break up, we get married in a few years.
Well, picking up on what you said to Jim about, and Jim, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And of course, commitment is such an important word to talk about. But I always, you know, I don't think you can run this experiment, but, you know, whether it makes sense to stay together, to be in an unhappy marriage and to stay together for the children, or whether to break off that marriage and try to create a happier, more stable environment for a child. I'm sure you've looked at that.
I think the problem is, how unhappy does the marriage have to be before it's better that you split? There's no doubt that if a marriage is in terrible shape, if there's domestic violence, if there's alcoholism, drug abuse, there's no doubt that the kids are better if that marriage dissolves. But is that what the typical marriage is like when it goes into a divorce? Mm. Or are there a lot of people who are saying they're kind of bored? They feel there ought to be more out of life than they're getting. They've changed since they got married. They're different kinds of people, and their partner no longer fits their lives. In that kind of marriage, it's not clear to me that it's better for the kids if they split. So, sure, a really bad marriage, no need to stay together for the sake of the kids. If your marriage is just kind of good enough but not exciting, well, it still could be better if you stayed together for the sake of the kids. And that's a problem in the kind of individualistic society we have, where people feel they have the right to develop and be happy and change their situation if they don't like it. That's the problem I have with staying together for the sake of the kids. How bad does it have to be before it's better that you split?
It seems we also live in a world of enormous choice, and I wonder whether that also influences people's behavior as a couple, as a married couple, which is that, you know, it just seems like a big, delicious world out there, if you know what
right,
I mean.
Choice is both great and terrifying, you know? It's terrific to have choices in your life, but there is such a thing as having too many choices. There's such a thing as being forced to choose all the time. The way we think of our lives these days, it's almost as if every day when we wake up, we're forced to say, well, how's my marriage going? You know, should I choose to do something about it? You know, how's my job? I'm constantly navel-gazing. I'm constantly looking at myself to see whether I'm doing okay, and if not, whether I should make more choices. Sometimes I might be happier if I didn't have so many choices to make, if I didn't have to do that every day. So I like choice. I wouldn't give it up, and neither would anybody else, and that's why we have high divorce rates, although they've been going down.
Right.
But on the other hand, I wonder if we live in a society where there are too many choices too often that we have to make.
Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Luke joining us from Beach Haven, New Jersey. Luke, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks for the excellent discussion. I think definitely the gay marriage debate has brought heterosexual marriage back to the forefront. So as someone who's going to be getting married at the end of the month, I've been with my future wife for just about 6 years, and I think so. I'm 25 years old, and I think we had a pretty long engagement, partially because we didn't really feel like we were grown up enough to get married yet. Not that we weren't ready to get married ourselves, but that we hadn't sort of checked off all the boxes of having a stable career, or because we're not progressed enough in our careers, or we just feel like we're, 20-something kids still.
Well,
Luke, I think the phenomenon of marriage is going to stick around largely because the cultural forces of, like, say yes to the dress and the four wedding shows and just look at any girl's Pinterest page.
Oh, I know. Been there. but let me ask you a question before we hear from our guest, Luke. So did you live with your fiancé? Have you lived together?
So thanks to the recession, we both got to live with our parents for a while, but we certainly made it a requirement that we live together for at least a year before we got married, just to, test drive the arrangement. But yes, it's been a great success.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Andrew Trillin, I'm curious about your thoughts. I mean, it seems like Luke is exactly what you've been writing about.
Right. Luke, I think what you're doing is what everybody else is doing these days. I liked it when you said you didn't feel grown up enough, or you wanted to wait until you were grown up, or you didn't feel you were grown up enough to get married at first. 50 years ago, the average woman was 20 years old when she got married, and the average man was 22. I mean, that seems like childhood to us now. What happened 50 years ago is you got married, and then you grew up. Really, you know, you got married quickly, and then you did all these other things. But being grown up has changed. What it means to be an adult has changed in this country. And there's a whole new life stage, I think, that Luke and his fiance are in. So some people are calling early adulthood. You're no longer a teenager, but you're not fully an adult. And during that time, you check off the boxes, as Luke said, and you build adulthood, you build up to being an adult, which you do later on. That's a real 21st century concept of what young adulthood means these days. I think it's very common. I think it's exactly what people are saying. But it sure is different from, say, my parents' generation, which is why they had such a hard time understanding what I and others of my generation were doing.
Well, Luke, thanks for the call and congratulations. Let me see what Nancy from media has to say. Nancy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
This is a question that I have thought about a great deal over the years, and it seems to me that the whole conversation about marriage would be vastly improved if we were much more explicit about what we mean by the word marriage. When you deconstruct marriage, the only thing that everybody agrees on is that it's a legal contract, and everything else is what people ascribe to it, and people differ on that. So by marriage, some people mean a legal contract and a wedding and a lifelong commitment. Other people, by the word marriage, mean a legal contract, living together, blending their finances, having children. Other people mean something else by marriage. When I married my late husband, we had been living together for a number of years. He got a terminal illness, and we decided to get married legally. And the only reason for that was so that I would have legal standing at the time of his death. That was the only reason. It had nothing to do with whether we had a lifelong commitment to each other, finances. It was simply that.
Well,
and I think that, there's so much moralistic talk about the subject of marriage, that if we cleared up what each person, what each couple means by their particular marriage, it would help a lot.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Andrew Trillin, can it be boiled down to that, to a legal contract?
For most people, it can't. I agree with Nancy that's the heart of it, and for a long time, I expected that's what would happen to marriage. It would just become a legal contract, as it was to her. But, you know, as I talk to people and read about this phenomenon, people have this larger moral meaning. For instance, when some sociologists have talked to living couples who are living together, they say things like, we're not going to go downtown to have a wedding. And you think, well, what does downtown mean? Well, downtown means the justice of the peace. And what these people are saying, we're not going to just get legally married. We're not going to get married until we can have a party, until we can have a celebration. So what is that about? It's not about the rights. It means that marriage still has a kind of moral value here. It's still very prestigious. And maybe someday we will get to the point where most everybody thinks of marriage only legally. But we're not there yet. And this other idea about marriage, the larger idea, has certainly hung on for a long time, and I don't see it fading away yet.
Well, Nancy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation with Andrew Trillin. He's been researching the American family for several decades now, including marriage and divorce and children, and he had an interesting piece in the New York Times recently about why people are getting married these days. He's a professor of public policy at Johns Hopkins University, and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Why get married? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro proudly supports WHYY. The University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro offers a dedicated senior care unit in the emergency department and a unit designed to meet the needs of elderly patients who are hospitalized. It is staffed by a clinical team that specializes in caring for older patients. You can learn more about their approach to senior care at PrincetonHCS.org or at 1-888-742-7496.
When filmmaker and actor Sarah Polley was growing up, her family would joke,
I didn't look much like my father. My dad probably wasn't my real dad.
Polley was 11 when her mother died with a secret. Years later, Polley went looking for the real story of her mother's life and in the process discovered her father wasn't her father. On the next Fresh Air, Polley talks about her documentary, Stories We Tell. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll find out why national security expert Juliet Kayyem says putting women in combat roles will help prevent sexual assaults as opposed to causing more, as some think. Also, talking to your kids about child abductions after the rescue of the kidnapped Cleveland women. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. If you're just joining us, Andrew Cherlin is our guest, professor of public policy at Johns Hopkins University, wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and Family Today, had a piece recently in the New York Times titled In the Season of Marriage, A Question, Why Bother? And that's what we're talking about today on Radio Times. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let's see what Heather from Edison, New Jersey has to say. Heather, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm actually getting married in 3 months. And and it just so happens that my fiance's brother and sister both also got married in the past year. And in talking to them and sort of looking at all of our families, we realized that all of our parents had been married fairly young and have stayed together, you know, for 20 plus years. And so for all of us, the idea of marriage was definitely this, you know, you get married and through thick and thin, now forever, you stay together. And we, you know, my fiance and I have definitely had our blow up to where we're like, oh God, are we doing the right thing? But then I know, like, you know, there was a girl that I knew whose mother had been through some terrible marriages, had been married a couple of times, there was abuse. And she had just wholeheartedly, like, never.
Yeah.
I would never get married. And I do wonder if there's some sort of, you know, evidence or if there's been studies done on sort of the people who come from parents who've stayed together and have, you know, they've seen them struggle, but they've survived versus, you know, people who have seen these awful incidences and their likelihood to get married and
sure.
stay married, if there's any sort of evidence like that.
Well, it's a good call, Heather. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Andrew Cherlin, go ahead.
There are some studies that show that people whose parents remain married themselves will marry and stay married longer. Part of that is maybe watching the commitment of your parents, as Heather just said. Part of it might be that those families tend to be more wealthy and more privileged. I see some young adults today who are saying, our parents were part of the high divorce generation. We know that divorce peaked around 1980. Mm-hmm. And we watched the divorce, and we don't want to do that again. Many of them are marrying, but they're seemingly married with a commitment that says, we're not going to do what they did. We're going to stay together more. What I'm seeing is that the ones who are able to make that commitment work are the ones who can still get decent jobs. I'm seeing the college-educated people who think that marry and stay married for a relatively long time. I mean, the divorce rate for college-educated Americans is back down to what it was around 1970. So, yes, people are better able to keep it together if their parents did, and yes, many people look at their parents and say, either I want to imitate that or that's what I don't want to do, and I think those impressions do make a difference for young adults like Heather when they're considering marriage.
Heather, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Andrew, what is the divorce rate? If it's not 50%, what is it?
We don't know for sure, but I would guess maybe about 1 in 3 rather than 1 in 2, you know, like 1/3 maybe rather than 1/2, which is a big change. Mm-hmm. At least I would guess that for people with college degrees. The problem is the divorce and marriage don't count all of these living together relationships that start, involve kids, and then break up. There's a lot of divorces in a way that we don't even see. So while the official divorce rate has been going down, which is great, there's a lot of disruption going on among people who were never married in their relationships. So the total rate of breakups of unions, if you want to call the living together relationships and marriages you know, unions,
right.
The total rate may not be all that much different from 50 years ago,
You've said this several times, and I think it's important just to underscore it, and it was also in the piece in the New York Times, which is looking at the jobless rate and the fact that for a large segment of our population and in many ways low-income population, getting a job, getting a good-paying job is getting harder and harder, and that influences a decision about marriage.
Those are the kinds of jobs that places like Baltimore, where I am, and Philadelphia, where you are, used to have a kind of factory jobs, shipbuilding jobs, jobs that somebody with a high school degree could get and that could support a family. Those jobs are largely gone now, and I think that's why people without college degrees are marrying less later and going ahead and having kids earlier. I think that it's much harder to support a family without the kinds of blue-collar jobs that we saw a generation or two ago.
Even though these people, generally speaking, they have a family, because if they're having children and obviously struggling in that, but that somehow family has come second to children.
Well, marriages come secondly to children. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I can't get a job like my father did at a steel plant because it's closed. But I still want to have kids, you know, and I'm not willing to forego that just because I can't get that job. So I might go ahead and have a baby with my girlfriend, but we're not going to get married. We're not going to get married until I can find a good job. So it's almost like marriage is optional, having kids is necessary, is the way people are looking at that. So family, well, these people have families, but they're not living together for long before they break up, and they're not getting married for a while. They're still family. They're still marriage, but it's becoming disconnected from having kids, at least for people without college degrees.
But do you think if and when the economy improves and we could even have something like a living wage, that would influence the marriage rate in this country?
Yes, I do. I think definitely it would. I think you have a lot of young adults who say, we'd like to get married, my girlfriend and me or my boyfriend and me, but we just don't have the economics to do it. It's a matter of money, above other things. We can't have a steady job-based family life. And so we're not going to get married. We'll go ahead and do other things. I think that a better job market for people who used to take the kind of blue-collar jobs we no longer have would, in fact, raise marriage rates and probably lower divorce rates in this country.
Let me get Scott from Bryn Mawr to join us. Scott, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to mention earlier, I was talked about the not divorcing for the sake of children, and how devastating divorce is on children. That could almost seem like something noble and virtuous these days, coming from a family where I've seen that firsthand, and I helped do a lot of cleanup work with nieces and nephews from the divorces of their parents. It's just so devastating on kids well into their 20s. And maybe the idea of staying together, even in a bad marriage, at least until children are past their major rearing years, is not such a bad idea. But I also wanted to ask your guest if you mentioned about people living together, and I wondered if there's any stats on the divorce rate of those who lived together before marriage versus the divorce rate amongst those after, and if there's any stats on that he knows of, maybe you can make a comment.
Scott, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Andrew Trillin, have you looked at the stats of those who lived together and those who didn't?
Yes, there are a number of studies that show that if you live together before you married, you're more likely to get divorced once you marry rather than less.
Now, why do you think that is?
I think it's because living together has an ethic that goes along with it, you know, a set of values. And those values say, if I'm unhappy with my relationship, I can break it. But I also think it's because the kinds of people who lived together when these studies were done, a lot of them are 10 or 20 years old, were maybe different in their thinking from people who wouldn't live together. The most recent studies show that this difference is fading. So today it may be that there's not that much difference between people who live together before marriage and those who don't, because so many people are living together. I mean, if 100% of people live together, there's not going to be any difference. So now we're seeing the average person live together, and so the average person's chances of getting divorced after marriage aren't really influenced by whether they live together. But in the past, people who were the ones who would be likely to live together were the ones who would be more likely to head for the exits if their marriage wasn't going well.
Interesting. Scott, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Andrew, he mentioned, I just want to give you a chance to underscore it, just how painful divorce can be for children. I think even children into their adulthood, if and when their parents' marriage falls apart.
Sure, it can be. At the same time, we know that most kids cope well with divorce. It raises the risk that your life isn't going to turn out exactly the way you want it to be, and we should be concerned about that. But most families and most kids cope. The question is, how bad should your marriage be before you decide it's better off if you split? I still think a very dysfunctional marriage is not a good is not good for kids.
Yeah.
But I have to say, a marriage where people are just a little bored or unhappy may still be better for kids than the alternative of having the parents split up.
Let me see what Heather has to say. Heather, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. That would be... Yeah, go ahead, Heather.
Hi, you can hear me. Great.
Yes.
Hi. I am currently in an 18-year relationship with my female partner, and I've recently been involved with the marriage equality campaign that happened in Delaware, which just passed last week, that allowed Delaware to become the 11th state to allow same-sex marriage. And a piece that always, you know, so I think about this topic a lot, and something that always kind of rubs the wrong way is the fact that it's legal for citizens to sign over, or a parent to allow their minor children to marry. You know, I am a product of a full-term, you know, my parents' marriage has been 35 years, we're still married. My partner's parents have been married for the same amount of time. But my brother married a minor. He wasn't much older than a minor, but the product of that marriage, a child, which we've been raising since he was one, he's now 12, you know, that whole marriage was so chaotic. And I agree with what you're saying about socioeconomic, you know, how that can really tie into it, because my parents would have never signed for myself as a female to be married as a minor. And I think that law, if we want to talk about marriage laws, that law needs to be repealed, because I just think that you shouldn't be able to sign over your minor child into a marriage if it's that important. You should wait at least until you're 18.
Heather, I want to hear from Andrew Cherlin about minors getting married, but since you live in Delaware, are you going to get married?
Yes. Well, we already are, as far as we're concerned, and that goes to the whole going down to the downtown, you know, but for us it was certainly about stability and the financial impact that marriage gives us, and that we can get the benefits and everything. And that way, when one of us dies, you know, getting the house, giving the house to the other and all that, you know, the legal repercussions and the financial repercussions were huge for us. And so excited to be part of what happened here in Delaware. And like I said, I'm glad that it did pass here.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Andrew Cherlin, she has an interesting story about, you know, minors getting married. I guess that's 18 and under. I'd just be curious about what that track record is about.
Teenagers who marry have very high rates of divorce. Mm-hmm. So clearly there are kinds of marriage that don't work out well that we allow. So the question is, and I take it to be Heather's point, why don't we allow gay and lesbian couples to marry? And in fact, we are in many states now. A lot of lesbian couples in Europe, after living together for a long time, wouldn't bother to get married, might not take advantage of it, even if it's available. In the U.S., I think gay and lesbian activists have been much more concerned with saying, we want access to marriage. We don't want just rights. We want marriage for the same reason everybody wants marriage, which is marriage gives you stability, but it also gives you a good sense of self. And so here, we've seen a tremendous change in public opinion in the U.S. I don't know that I've ever seen attitudes toward a controversial public issue change so quickly as we've seen with same-sex marriage. A majority of Americans now think that this is a thing we ought to have, and the reason is because it encourages commitment, because it gives people a sense of stability in their lives. And why shouldn't everybody have that? That, I think, is the argument that's carried the day here. It's an argument that was made by advocates of same-sex marriage, who, in doing that, really strengthened everybody else's marriage, because they've made marriage, whatever the sex of the partners, seem more important as a measure of commitment and stability and also rights. That's the amazing change we've seen in just a few years in the U.S.
We only have a minute or so before we have to say goodbye here, but I'm curious how you got interested in this subject. Obviously, it's a very rich subject to discuss and to do research on and to write about, but how did you get into this biz?
I was interested in city problems when I went to grad school a century ago, and I got interested in the problems of families in cities, and somehow dropped the cities although they're coming back in.
Yes, they are.
My research and got interested in the problems of families. And remember, when I was in grad school and I was a young professor in the 1970s, there was a lot of action. Look, living together was becoming much more important. Divorce rates were skyrocketing. It really looked like the family was falling apart. Interestingly, it hasn't fallen apart. But it sure has changed since then, and we've seen this hour some of the ways in which that change has happened.
Mm-hmm. And looking ahead, I'm just curious about, is there a particular piece of research that you're looking at or a phenomenon that you're looking at?
Yeah, I'm looking at what we used to call the blue-collar family, the working-class family. With the jobs gone, what's happening to the folks who used to form those families, and what's happening to that kind of family? Is it fading away or not? And next year I'm going to write a book, and the title is going to be The Rise and Fall of the Working-Class Family. That's mm-hmm. what I'll be up to.
Well, we'll probably be giving you a call. Andrew Turlin, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Sure. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Andrew Turlin, professor of public policy at Johns Hopkins University, and his work, as you could probably figure it out, focuses on the sociology of families and public policy, on marriage and divorce and children's well-being. He does have a book coming out in about a year or so. His most recent book is The Marriage Go-Round, The State of Marriage and Family Today. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Emily Bryant helping us out today. The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us. And we do want to close things out with a song called Married from the original cast recording of Cabaret.
How the world can change. It can change like that due to one little word. Married. See a palace rise from a two-room flat due to one little word, married. And the old despair that was often there suddenly ceases to be. For you wake one day, look around and say, somebody wonderful married.